Amy at 97 FM in Springfield, and my show is Radioactive. Can anyone out there hear me?
Sick of silence, let it out.
This is Ethan from LA,
I'm 16, but I'm not sweet.
Are you running the streets? Call the Rio Runaway Hotline.
KCAT, Los Gatos, California.
This is, I am. Are you?
This is No Protection, out from New Jersey.
Hi, you're on the air.
Turn on the truth.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, B-Fan Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. And as always, thank you for giving me your time. Today I'm here with
Dr. Terry Church.
And can you tell us just a little bit about yourself, where you're from maybe, how you became a doctor, things like that?
So that's a long story.
Yeah.
I never really thought I would become a doctor.
Yeah.
I didn't really want to become one.
Mm-hmm.
Until I was halfway through my undergraduate program at the University of Pittsburgh, and I said, oh, maybe I should figure out what I'm going to do with my life, as one does.
Yeah.
And I really thought I would be the next great anthropologist. Like that was my goal. I wanted to go out and research people and write books and do all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize that anthropologists don't make a lot of money, first. And second, when they write for other anthropologists.
Oh.
So I started my PhD in anthropology at Temple University.
Mm-hmm.
And a year in, they decided that all PhD-funded programs in anthropology, sociology, and history would be put on suspension. Because they were running out of money, I guess.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
So basically, I had no choice. They were like, get a master's or get out. So
yeah.
I was like, oh, all right, it's Philly. You're pretty hardcore. I'll just, you know, get out. Got my master's and then didn't really know what to do with my life at that point. So for 10 years, I took a 10-year gap year, which, you know, some people who they can go straight through and get all the degrees that they want.
Yeah.
I'm so proud of them, but that wasn't me.
That's a lot.
It is. So I ended up spending 2 years in Japan teaching English as a second language.
Wow.
Traveling through Japan and parts of Asia, which I absolutely loved.
Yeah.
And then realized that, well, maybe I should, you know, figure out what I'm going to do when I get stateside again. So I started working for GlaxoSmithKline.
Okay, what's that?
A pretty large pharmaceutical company.
All right.
They make everything from like toothpaste all the way through to some really potent drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working in their cancer group. So kind of just treading water, trying to find what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
From there, I went and worked at the University of Pennsylvania, and
okay.
I was doing human subjects research. I was in charge of that. And from there, I got recruited to USC, started working in cancer program here. Really liked it, and I said, you know, I like doing research, but not other people's research. I want to do my own.
Yeah.
So I had to make the tough choice and started school here at USC, and I've been here now 10 years. So absolutely love it.
Nice.
Yep.
And before we get into the topic of drugs, could you go into the experience in Japan and like in Asia?
Oh, yeah.
How was that?
It was a trip, dude. Like, it was so crazy. Where I started in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
Tokyo's huge. You know, I grew up in big cities. I grew up in Manhattan.
Okay.
So I'm used to the cities, but Tokyo is unlike anything you've ever seen. It's
wow.
just constant people going.
Yeah.
And for the first month, it was good. But then I decided I wanted something a little more low-key.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to this really small town, Nara. It used to be the ancient capital. So there have been many capitals of Japan. But it was like one of the first.
Wow.
And they have deer there. That's what it's like known for. But these deer, like, they are gangster.
Oh.
They, like, if you don't have food, they're going to take anything they can out of your pockets. Like, they don't care.
That's crazy.
They are there to, like, get food.
Does
and if you don't have it, forget it. They're going to rob you from everything you got.
Yeah.
And so that's a trip.
Mm-hmm.
But started teaching there, and I realized, oh, this is kind of like a small town. It's kind of... And by small town, I mean like a small little city.
Mm-hmm.
But still, when I would get on the bus, because I have blonde hair, the kids would like play with my hair because it's good luck. Like if they have statues with people with light hair and you're supposed to rub the hair. And
oh,
it,
that's
like,
sweet.
It's good. But yeah, it was just really, really different and unique. And when I went, like all I thought was, oh, Japanese people eat sushi every day. I don't know if I'm going to do that. Luckily, I found ramen, like
that's
real ramen, not the box stuff. And, you know, just made a go of it.
That's good.
But it was an experience. I didn't know any Japanese whatsoever. Picked up some and was able to read a little bit before I left. But everyone was just so friendly. Not like here in the U.S. where people say, hey, let's go to lunch. And then you never hear from them again. In Japan, if they say, hey, let's go to lunch, it's usually that day. Like, you're
let's
going
do
then.
It right now.
Yeah.
No,
so
no need to prolong.
Completely different.
Yeah.
Altogether.
All right. So we got that. Now let's jump into the real topic.
Excellent.
How did you become a professor of history and geography on drugs?
So that's a great story. So a part of what my research is, I look at the ways that people use currently prescribed drugs in ways that they shouldn't. So if you are prescribed, you know, pain medicine, all of a sudden what we're seeing is a trend where people who have been prescribed pain medicine, like an opioid, and become addicted to it, once that prescription runs out, what do they do?
Right.
And what we found is that more and more people are turning to street drugs like heroin and the like, fentanyl in some cases, which is deadly. But they're doing it not because, you know, they're a bad person. They're doing it because they have a craving, a need that they can't get. And, you know, they have to find a fix for it.
Right.
So understanding how that process works and how we can change the way that we prescribe pain medicine is very important. It's one of the things I'm really, really into. Also, looking at the way we use over-the-counter products.
Right.
So you probably have heard of lean before, which just sounds awful to me. I mean, cough syrup in and of itself isn't good, but to mix it with Sprite or Starry, like, what's the point? Other than the fact that you're going to have a bit of a hallucination, but you could also die.
Wow.
Like almost immediately from it. So understanding how those patterns are being done and why people are doing them is really important, and making sure that we can get messages out there to make sure people are being safe and doing things safely.
Yeah, with the lean, it's a, I watched this like Vice video.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
The African tribe, and they like,
and they just like down it. Like,
yeah, and it's like in these small bottles. And wait, can you give a little bit more context for the people who just don't know?
Sure. Yeah. So lean, the premise here is you need something that has dextromorphin in it. And it's a base compound that has morphine, dextromorphine. So it's got morphine in it, not enough to be clinical grade or enough to be prescription based, but enough of the isomer that it's relevant. So the chemical itself really boosts your serotonin, but it also decongests you. So it's got a little bit of a stimulant in it to help clear out your lungs. Which is great if you're sick. I mean, you're not going to get anything to make you feel any better than that, other than ephedra. But that's the main focus of it. And if you're not sick and your body's not fighting an infection, it tends to do crazy things. Like you start to have minor hallucinations. Things look wonky. Like the trip itself isn't very long. It's maybe an hour, hour and a half. But you can keep it going by redosing and redosing and redosing. Right. The problem is, you know, when you're high and doing that, you don't realize, oh, I just took the dose that's going to kill me.
Because
you dose and dose and dose, and before you know it, you're taking that one that is the one that's going to take you under.
And does it work like how, like, you can get used to the drugs to that? So you need more.
You build a tolerance to it, and which means next time you do it, you have to have more. Now, obviously, if you go like 3 or 4 weeks between doing it, you won't build the tolerance.
Yeah.
But people who do it consistently, it does build a tolerance. And it can also really harm your kidneys if you do it day after day.
Because it's so high in sugar content, right?
And just your kidneys are trying to process those chemicals to get them out. It sees it as a poison or toxin, so it's trying to get rid of it. So that's kind of the danger of it. But then you have people who go on social media who are really prominent. You have people who rap about it, sing about it, like it's no big thing. So how do you counter that? Like that's the big question that I always have. Like, how do we get around those messages that, you know, this is something you should do?
Yeah.
And it's not that I'm saying don't do it. It's have the information you need before you do
it. So you understand what you do. What philosophy is that? I feel like we learned about that.
Harm reduction.
Yeah.
And that's my whole thing. Like, you can do whatever you want. Like, I'm not your parents. I'm not gonna tell you what to do.
Yeah.
But you should be knowledgeable about what you're doing.
Understanding the consequences.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you are willing to accept those consequences, by all means, do whatever you do.
Yeah.
But if you don't know those consequences going into it, it can have some very deadly repercussions.
Real.
And you don't want your mom, you know, finding your body at home trying to figure out what the hell went wrong.
Yeah.
So.
And then the autopsy, all the other stuff.
Yep.
But one thing that has been very prominent, I don't know, well, you probably do know, the galaxy gas.
Oh my God. Yeah. So
what is that about? What is that?
So it's this new like phenomenon, and you can buy it. It's gets the gas name because you can get it at gas stations.
Wow.
And it's basically an herbal concoction that will give you kind of an out-of-body experience. So it's a little bit like a delirium. So you take it and you feel like you're out of your body, like floating above it. You can see everything that's happening, but you can't make your body work. It's kind of like being trapped in. like you know what's happening, but yeah. you can't do anything to stop it.
Wow.
And there's some minor hallucinations with it, and you know, for whatever reason, people think that that feels good, so let's continue doing it.
Yeah.
But the problem is, again, it's very toxic, mm-hmm. and it can lead to overdose so fast.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, these things aren't tested by the FDA when they're being sold at the counter of a 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
FDA hasn't looked at that. They haven't done any safety reports on it. So, you know, always be wary mm-hmm. with those things. Anything yeah. you purchase off the street or that's over the counter, you have to kind of be a little skeptical about.
How does that work? How does it get behind the counter in the first place?
So they do it as a supplement to the FDA. And the FDA thinks of supplements as being safe until proven harmful.
Right.
Where as a drug, they look at a drug as being harmful until proven safe.
Okay.
So completely different philosophies. Mm-hmm. It takes about 10 years to get a drug approved through the FDA. It takes 75 days to get a supplement approved through the FDA.
Wow.
So as long as you're not saying this will cure you mm-hmm. or making claims about health, it goes right through.
Wow.
And that's what a lot of these people do. So Galaxy, their whole campaign is this will help you stay alert. This will help you get the energy you need. And they'd say nothing about health in their advertisement, so it went right through.
Yeah.
And with the mentality of it's safe until proven otherwise, until there were overdoses, they didn't even look at it.
Wow.
Yeah.
And have you heard of, like, the carts? Like, people, what are those about?
So the carts, it depends on where you are. So people try to stack different substances together, mm-hmm. and that's what the cart is. So it's three different substances that you stacked together in mm-hmm. the hopes that it's going to get you somewhere.
Oh, wow.
You know, people, a lot of these things happen because they make you feel good, right? If drugs made you feel horrible, we would have no problem with drugs.
Yeah.
Nobody would want to do them.
Yeah.
If someone had said, you know, take this, you're going to feel great, but you're going to crap your pants for the next hour, nobody would take it.
Yeah.
Nobody would want to do that. But, you know, the problem is they make us feel good. They trigger things in our brains that make us want them.
Yeah.
You know, your brain doesn't know if it's a mango that's ripe that you're eating or if it's heroin that you're shooting in your arm. It's just like, ooh, that's a good feeling. Let's do that again.
Yeah.
And it pushes you to want to do it again and again. And if you have the ability to ignore that voice or to push it aside, mm-hmm. you're great.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are people who can't do that. And once they find that thing, they're like, ooh, yeah, I need to do that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just your brain. I mean, evolutionarily, we're built that way.
Right.
It makes sense because if you're out, you know, not in a city trying to find your food, you'll eat whatever. And as long as it's good, you're going to go back to it. So your brain's telling you, hey, go do that again. We need that again.
Yeah.
So it's kind of built into a lot of people. So long way around answering your question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And before, I really want to talk about, like, the social aspects of how, like, drugs have helped us grow as a society. But it's, like, one more drug that I have a question about.
Sure.
And have you heard about Trank?
Oh, Trank is scary, too.
Right.
So it is an over-the-counter synthetic opioid.
Oh, wow.
So it was just recently found to, well, it's been taken off of the market by the mm-hmm. FDA, but you can still find it at some gas stations.
Yeah.
Actually, I first heard about this with some overdose cases that came from Palm Springs, California. So Palm Springs is this retirement community. You
yeah.
know, a lot of people go there from LA. They just go retire, live out in the desert, and do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of older gentlemen were dying because of it, because they were using Trank as kind of a cheap form of Viagra that you could purchase from the gas station.
Yeah.
You know, whatever they're doing, but you know, at the same time, they weren't paying attention to how much they were taking, how frequently they were doing it, and they just overdosed.
Mm.
So it's been a real problem. And you know, you always find these substances at least once a year. There's something that comes up that is sold over the counter that mm-hmm. is really, really bad for you. But again, it makes you feel good, so people are going
to
do it.
Yeah. Okay. So into the social aspects of drugs and how they helped us grow as a society. How do you feel about that?
Ooh, so, you know, a lot of times you'll hear people say that the reason we built the first city was because we were getting grains and we were making all of this stuff for agriculture so that we could grow, make bread, grow our civilization. And that's a whole lot of crap. What we found in the archaeological record and the historical record is cannabis and beer were the two things that people started. That's what brought us all together and also what kept us together. I mean, we have no evolutionary tie to want to be in groups.
Yeah.
We are social creatures, but mm-hmm. that doesn't mean we want to live side by side, like in a row home with somebody.
Yeah.
You know, you got all your neighbors, you know all of them.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that that's how we're geared to be. People need their space. They, you know, you may have people that you love that are close, but you still need your space.
Yeah.
But these things allowed us to live together. And by consuming them, you're able to, you know, forget that that guy across the street, like, stole your stuff and still had your lawnmower. Like,
yeah.
You're able to kind of overlook it. And it has taken on this role of social facilitation. So think of any party that you've gone to as an adult, wedding, funeral, whatever it may be.
There's nobody
always
is sober.
Alcohol, yeah. Always alcohol. And it's part of our culture. It's part of what we do as people. When you go to someone's house, you usually take a bottle of wine or some beer. You take something.
As a gift, you know. To
just to give them, you know, thanks for having me over for dinner, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
Any professional conference that you go to, there's always a bar. Like, it's just built in.
Yeah.
And, you know, we take it for granted, but you really come into focus with it when you see someone who's recovering from alcoholism.
Right.
Because they're like, you don't see it until you can't have it.
Right.
And then you know that it's everywhere.
Yeah.
And we don't even think anything about it. I mean, we're coming up on a game day here on campus, and you know tomorrow's not going to be dry.
Yeah. So. That's a good one. Oh, man, I had a great question, but I'll probably just skip over it till it comes back. The other one was... Dang, it is. I don't know if it's a theory or not, but sometimes I think about how, like, us being high is the real experience of life, and then us being sober is, like, the other part. Yeah.
So, you know, and this is something that a lot of people have theorized about, a lot of philosophers think about, and it's a fun game to, like, consider, like, because if you're in a different zone, the world just seems different, right?
Right. Like,
you've got access to different things. Sometimes you're more creative. Sometimes you're able to, you know, actually sing or think you can.
Yeah.
But it gives you a way to kind of live without inhibition. And that's kind of the hallmark for a lot of these substances that people take. There's a really good book. It's called The Enlightened Chimp. And it looks at how different substances throughout the evolutionary path have really focused not only us, but our closest family members on the evolutionary tree into being more social, into doing things that would not normally be done out in the wild just because we have this alcohol, or in the case of primates, they have fermented fruit right out of the jungle.
Like, yeah.
That they're consuming. They're seeking it out.
Yeah.
Why would they seek it out?
Because
there's no need.
It makes you
feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Most religions in the past, up until we get to Christianity, they had some form of therapeutic release that they would use either psilocybin or cannabis, something to really enhance the spirituality.
Yeah.
And they felt that that brought you closer to the divine, closer to whatever your deity might be.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all normal practice.
Yeah.
It was the Christians that came along and said, nope, no more. You can have wine every once in a while, but that's it.
Wow.
So for a long time in our history, we had these ties to it being part of the ritual or part of the process of being a spiritual being.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense. And, you know, I think that some people can definitely vibe like that.
Mm-hmm.
I learned early on that cannabis isn't for me. it freaks me out. Like, I learned early on, like, nope, I'm good. I'll be the driver. I'll be the driver.
And, I found my question. It was like, what culture do you think has, like, the most interesting way of coming together with the use of drugs or, like, outside substances?
Wow, that's a good one. You know, so there have been a lot of them, but I would have to say that, in general, you're looking at more communal-based societies.
Okay.
So I think of people in South Africa. They do a lot of really good stuff in terms, and what I mean by good stuff, drugs that are not, like, too bad, but they do a lot of creative stuff while they're doing it, a lot of ritual, a lot of dance, a lot of song, storytelling. A lot of that is done through the use of cannabis or other substances.
Mm-hmm.
You can think of places like the Amazon rainforest, where they have ayahuasca. I have issues with ayahuasca just because of what it does to you before it sets in.
But isn't it like you gotta, like, throw up?
Oh, and, yeah.
Like,
you, like, throw up. Yep, yeah. For like a half an hour.
Oh,
it's nothing but vomit. And then you get the high.
Oh.
But you have to pay the price for it, right?
True, yeah.
And, you know, I'm too much of a wimp. I don't want to throw up for a half an hour. So.
Yeah.
But those societies and cultures where you're not doing the drug every day. You do it for specific reasons, for ritual reasons, to bring people together, to promote spirituality. I think those are the places where it's done the best.
Wow.
You know, here in the U.S., we take for granted that the pill is going to cure you, whatever that pill might be.
Right.
Whether it's sugar, whether it's, you know, cancer, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. We also forget that that's part of the process. You know, you also have to get up and move, and you have to eat right. There's things you have to do, but Americans don't want to hear that.
Yeah, no,
they just
want to
hear, you take this pill, you'll be all right.
Yeah.
So we look at it as medicine, and if a doctor gives it to you, it can't be bad, right?
Yeah.
Which is problematic, because that's how people fall into addiction, especially with opioids. So I think that our approach to these substances is the bad one.
Yeah.
Because we look at it as being bad or not good, and we also punish people because of it.
I mean,
how many people do you see talking about someone who's addicted in a positive way?
Mm-hmm.
We don't. As soon as you know somebody's addicted, they're a crackhead, they're this, they're that.
Mm-hmm.
And it really focuses negatively on that person, and it makes it more difficult for them to
get out of their addiction. Be able to kick it, because it's a negative feedback loop of everybody already hates me, so I might as well do it anyway.
And I'm here to tell you, there's no good drug, there's no bad drug.
Yeah.
They're just drugs. They do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, we can't look at them as bad.
But society puts good or bad on it based off of what they think is appropriate or right.
Yeah. Now, I really want to talk about, like, placebo effects.
Oh,
is that something that you have to study when you're becoming a doctor that you are?
You do. So, I mean, it's part of what you do. So if you're trying to find use of a drug, so you create a placebo, which is just usually a sugar pill, has no drug in it, versus the pill that has the drug in it. So that way you can really measure, okay, who is this really something that we're seeing? Like, is this really moving this tumor marker down, up, whatever it may be that you're measuring? And the placebo is useful in that setting because it allows you to say, oh, yeah, there's clearly an effect here. Like, this drug is actually doing what we want it to do, and that's what it's predominantly made for. But, you know, throughout history, people have used placebos as a way of, you know, making sure they have a lot of drug.
Yeah.
You know, they figure out who they can scam, and they're like, oh, yeah, you're going to feel it with this one. Like, just try it. And they don't get anything.
Wow.
But, you know, we have a long history here in the U.S. of doing that with drugs. Mm-hmm. We call it quackery.
Wow.
So from like the 1800s on, people would just create stuff in their bathtub and then go and sell it. And they would do it. They would do it by wagon. So, you know, they'd go in and there'd be like all this fanfare. People would be like having jugglers, all kinds of stuff going on to get people to come into the center of town.
Oh, yeah.
Selling the medicine and be like, it'll cure everything.
Yeah, I learned that in actually a history on stand-up comedy class. that's actually kind
of crazy. Cool.
I had it comes back together. But what he's talking about is like people would like come into town with these different things, and they'd be like these fake pharmacists, and they would try to do something funny to gather a crowd, and then they would try to sell medicine on top of that.
Yep, what they were calling medicine. Yes. Quote. And then, you know, the beauty with that is by the time they were done in the evening after they took everybody's money, they were on their way to the next town.
Yeah, they didn't even have to think about the repercussions.
Not at all. If you killed people, well, you know, they bought it.
Yeah.
It's their fault. They should have tested it before they took it.
Yeah.
But this kind of mentality has been with us for a long time. Mm-hmm. So this whole idea of a placebo or a drug that doesn't work, sometimes it gets a negative view.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people still use it today in what we call street capitalism. That's a fancy way of saying drug dealing.
Yeah.
So if you're in that market, you know, sometimes you have to make ends meet. So you'll give people something that's not the real product so that you can conserve the product you have and make it last longer.
Mm.
So there's a lot of uses for it.
Yeah.
But scientifically, it's got a real purpose.
Now, do you have any, like, favorite drug movies? Like, either that be, like, Drug Cartel or the usage of drugs?
Oh,
like,
I got a lot of them.
Okay, let's hear about it.
So my favorite one that I didn't know I liked until I actually got to know the producer for it is Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. So
okay.
I got to meet the person who, like, came up with the whole producing vision, directing, everything. She is the bomb. Like, she's just amazing.
Tell us about it.
So it was through USC, and we were on a panel together.
Okay.
I was invited to talk about what hallucinogens do to the body and what it's all about. And she was there to talk about the film. And we were watching the film, and periodically we'd stop and say, okay, look at this scene. This is what Johnny Depp is doing as he is in the middle of taking X drug.
Yeah.
And we would talk about how real it is, how unreal it is. And, you know, most of the movie, the experiences that you see portrayed are 100% real. Like, there's... I basically had to ask the question, did they really take KRE? Like, this looks too real to be faked. And they didn't, allegedly. Just getting to know the producer and seeing, like, how she sees the world was just amazing. I mean, I think she's tested more drugs than the FDA just herself. but just a really unique perspective. And so that's a good movie, I think. It's kind of trippy. It takes a while to get into it, but that's a good one. Definitely Godfather, or not Godfather, Scarface definitely is a good one.
Talk about that all day.
Blow, that's a good one too. Yeah. But it focuses mostly on cocaine and the cocaine trafficking. Mm-hmm. There's a really messed up movie. I almost dropped the F-bomb right there. Sorry.
Yeah, it is okay.
But it is. So Maria Full of Grace.
Maria Full of Grace. Okay.
It's like, don't watch it alone.
Oh, wow.
Like, it's a sad story.
Oh.
Basically, it's about this young woman who gets pulled into drug trafficking, and she has to swallow all of these balloons full of drugs.
Yeah.
It's her and like three other girls, and they have their families. Like, they're wow, ready to like slit their throats if they don't walk this stuff across the border.
Yeah.
One of the girls, like, the balloons break open, so she overdoses before she even gets through customs.
Right.
Another girl makes it through customs. Well, the other two girls make it through customs, and then you see the very last scene. There's this woman laying in a bathtub with her stomach cut open.
Yeah.
Rather than wait for the drugs to like naturally
pass
go through.
Yeah.
They were like, you're expendable.
Wow.
So you did what you had to do.
Yeah.
And they just sliced her open and took the drugs out.
It's
a messed up movie.
It is. It sounds horrible. Scarface is another one of my favorite movies, just because of like, I don't know. Just understanding how the systems work and how you can bypass certain things, and just to see a guy go from rags to riches
and then lose it all.
Ah, it sucks.
I mean, and it hits hard.
Yeah.
You know, I keep waiting for there to be like a really good rave based movie, but you know, they're all pretty cheesy. I'm going to say it, there are a lot of white people in it, which I don't really like a lot of in terms of movies, but it is what it is, you know? But there have been a few good ones. And then you have the ones that are kind of one-off that are about drugs, but not about drugs.
Yeah.
Like the Gene Wilder, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I mean, obviously that's so much about LSD. Like,
wow. I didn't think about it. Like, well, I have as I got older, but
But dig into
that.
About
I want to. I want to hear more about that.
I mean, even the songs and the colors and the way the music goes. Like, it definitely. Somebody was either tripping while they were on set, or they were tripping when they wrote the screenplay. Yeah. I don't know, but one of the two.
Yeah.
But it has undertones in it.
Yeah.
Clockwork Orange is another one. That one's messed up in the head, though. It's all about people in mental institution that keep giving stimulants to.
Yeah.
And they go on killing sprees, like. It's really, this time of year, though, it's pretty good. I mean, coming up on Halloween.
I'm going to get that list after this is over. Have you ever seen the movie Limitless?
I have. And, you know, it's a unique premise, right? So Limitless is all about, here, take this pill, and it will unlock anything in you.
Yeah.
Which is great. I mean, who doesn't want that to happen?
Yeah.
But I think that if that were the case, nobody who was not in the top 5% would see that.
Yeah.
They would be the ones that control it. Everyone else would be lucky if they even heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
Another good one is The Boys. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Well, that's the vampire one, right?
So it's superheroes.
Oh, the superhero. I'm thinking.
Yeah. So they have this compound. It's like, I forget what it is. It's like a letter of the alphabet. Whatever. It's not important. But they take this mystery compound and it gives them all superpowers.
Oh.
And some people, it mutates and you get to keep the powers, and others, it like doesn't. And as soon as it's out of your system, like, that's it. You can't have powers ever again. But it's kind of messed up. But it's a good look, I think.
Yeah. And do you have any questions for me? Like,
so, you know, I did a little bit of background, took a look at your podcast.
Yeah.
What got you into it?
What got me into the podcast was, like, wanting to know individuals past their everyday life. You know what I'm saying? I come to class, you know what I'm saying? Teach for the hour and 50 minutes, and then we leave. But it's like, these people do this research. You have the doctor title. So it's like, obviously they have a backstory, and it's all about figuring out what that story is or what you're willing to share.
Oh, yeah.
And even students, they come on and you learn more about them past the what's up, how you doing, you know what I'm saying? The what's up, how you doing?
Beyond the head nod.
Right. And so you get to know them on a deeper level, and they get to open up, and you see them like turn into like this different individual that are able to express themselves and see themselves for who they really are.
That's awesome.
And they often leave like, you know, a little bit inspired to do more. And so that's
a good feeling. Like, that's something good.
Yeah, that's
for sure. So how long have you been doing it? Like, did you do it when you were not at USC? Did you do it like high school started?
Yeah, so I'm a sophomore, and I had the idea like during COVID. Oh. Like back in 2020, and I wrote it down. I was working with my friends. His name is Jalen Gary. And we were like in a PlayStation party, and you know how those are. You just, you're like, yo, we got to start this podcast. We got to do this. And so I developed like the idea, like the framework of it. I really like working like with skeletons of ideas. I don't like flushing an idea all the way out.
That's how I work.
Because it's like, Brad, now you didn't ruin the whole thing.
If I have to write it down, that means it has to happen.
Yeah. Instead of me just doing it. So. Yep. I came up with the skeleton idea. I came up with the name like on the spot. I was like, bro, you just a brother from another mother.
That's
so
perfect. Yeah. It's perfect.
So we had that, and then it sat in my notes for like three, four years. And one random summer, it was like I had graduated high school, and it was like right before I moved out to USC. It was like July 31st, 2023. And I was watching TikTok on my iPad.
As you do.
And it was like hey, if you feel like starting that podcast, just do it. You got to get up and do it. And I was like, wow, I've seen a lot of these videos, but it's like hitting extra hard right now. So I took that, I opened my voice memos up, and I like, boom, I got straight to it.
Went with it.
Yeah, when I got out here, I just kept looking for interviews and looking to get to know people because I've always been like an inquisitive person, and I always want to get to know people past what I have to know. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I learned this lesson from my mom because I would go out places and I'll come back. Like even just being a kid, I was a kid, I'll just go like hang out with friends or go out with like aunts and uncles and stuff like that. And I'll come back and she'll be like, all right, well, who was there? And I'll be like, well, I don't know who was there.
What were they doing?
Yes. Yep. And it's not because she wanted to press me, but it was because she wanted me to be aware of the people that I was around. So she was like, you better not come back not knowing who you were with.
That's a good lesson to learn.
You could have been involved in something you don't even know.
Exactly.
So now every time I come back, I know birthdays, birthplaces, I know professions.
What sign they are. Like, you got it down.
Everything, yeah. And so, yeah, and then the motivation to keep it going is like, I didn't give myself a big workload because a lot of people, they think about podcasts, they go, oh, I got to do this and then I got to do that. But really, if I put myself on the, when I first got started, I think I wanted to do two interviews a week. Yeah. I had enough time to do two interviews a week. And then I started to realize like, all right, I've grown enough. I got a good little run to it. And I ended up getting into a flow where I was able to like book interviews and then had episodes stacked up. Now I think I'm back on the just one episode a week track, you know what I'm saying? And it's how I go. Every Friday, I can get up and be excited about something. It's like, as long as I can get one this week.
That's it. That's all
boom,
I need.
Boom, that's all I need. And that's cool. It's an episode a week and it's easy to keep up with. And it keeps you distracted from the sort of everyday, not pains. It's not like I'm ignoring anything, but
exactly.
You get this relative flow. It's like, boom.
So that leads me to my next question for you. So why the history and geography of drugs? Like what drew you to the class?
I really like the idea of drugs. I don't know. I say this all the time. I know I probably shouldn't say this on a public interview or podcast, but like,
it's all right. No judgment. Yeah.
If I could be anything I wanted, like without the repercussions, if we just thinking straight purge right now.
Yep.
I would want to be like the biggest mafia boss ever.
Just that's why Scarface speaks to you. Yeah. Okay.
So it's like, just because the excitement it brings when I like watch the stuff. I don't do it, but like when I watch the stuff, it's like the organization of it, the being able to handle this and handle that. And
it's a crazy thing. Like if you think about it, it's like a job. Yeah. It is a job. I mean, because you have to manage people, you have to know what inventory you have. Like it's a lot of work.
Know the numbers. You got to be an accountant, a CEO, the CFO, CMO, all at the same time while watching your own back and then being able to pay this guy off and know you got to know him next week and take care of this guy. And if you let them talk too much, they might know a little too much.
Excellent.
You know, and so when I saw the class, I was like, wow, this would be a... I like history, but I don't really like the history of America, like learning about the presidents and stuff.
Well, you know, American history sucks. It does. Like, it just does. Yeah. Until you hit, like, 1960. And then things, like, start changing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, like, where I pick up with American history. Yeah. Everything before that, I'm like, well, it happened.
Brad, like, come on.
It happened.
The Boston Tea Party or whatever. Like, nobody wants to know about
that. Great, you big nerd.
Yeah.
Keep it moving.
But, yeah, understanding, like, or... I always like to read, too. So just having random information. I would rather learn everything in your class and be able to spit that in a conversation than go to whatever business class and start talking in formulas. You know what I mean?
So I thank you for that because, you know, as I was putting this course together, like, I looked at all the general electives and I was like, this sucks. Like, I wouldn't want to take any of these classes. And then, you know, I got thinking about it and I was like, well, one thing that we don't talk about from history are the drugs that people did.
Yeah.
Like you have history through high school, through grade school, Nobody talks about, you may hear them say, oh, they drank a little wine.
Yeah.
They didn't drink a little wine.
They drank a lot.
A lot of wine. Yeah. But there were other things too, and it kind of got me curious because there was this kind of don't ask, don't tell policy on the past where, you know, you don't talk about the bad things because that's our past and we have to keep it like pure and whatever. So as I started doing research, I was like, our history is about people getting down with the get down. Like, we need to like tell people about that. Yeah. Like it should be part of what we talk
and
about.
And display, like, we all human. We
exactly
as a whole world we've experienced. So why do we put it behind the scenes? It's not like it's one specified group doing it and we got to look at them and put them behind the curtain. It's the entire world. So who are we saving ourselves from?
And by not talking about it, we're allowing addiction to continue. Because we keep it hidden. We don't talk about it. That's somebody else's problem. And really, we've had drugs in human society for over 10,000 years.
Since forever.
Yeah. And, you know, not just beer. Like, they were doing all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And stuff that, you know, you look at and you're like, you did that? All right. You're a little harder than I thought you were. Okay, I see you.
Yeah.
But not talking about it makes a bigger problem.
Yeah.
Because it makes it seem like it's a modern current problem that only occurred within the past 50 years.
Yeah.
And that's not the case
at all. And I feel like it's one of those things to where, what's the effect? It's like the difference between ages that you can drink alcohol. So like,
oh yeah,
in America it's 21 and up. That probes like younger teens wanting to do it because they're rebelling, you know what I'm saying? Versus in Europe is 18, you can drink, and it seems more controlled.
It's more normalized.
Yeah.
Because beer and wine are part of every day.
Yeah.
Whereas here, you know, it's you see it on TV. You know, people don't watch MTV anymore, but when they did, you'd see people with 40s, like, just having a great time.
Yeah.
And it's not like they're, you know, people studying and drinking. It's people out. They're having a good time. They're dancing, singing, doing whatever. TikTok, I mean, every time you look at TikTok, you always see somebody drinking or vaping or doing something. And the same with YouTube. I mean, it exists, but we glamorize it.
Yeah.
Instead of having a healthy discussion about it, we're like, oh, yeah, if you want to be the cool kid, like, you got to go do this.
Right.
And we were able to stop people from smoking cigarettes by saying, no, cool kids don't smoke. Yeah. It's bad. Like, don't do it.
Yeah.
And over a period of 20 years, you see the decline in cigarettes. But then vaping starts again. And now we're back at the same place we were. So it comes in cycles. It comes and goes. But I think that that's the interesting part about studying drugs.
It is.
The more you know, the better you're off, right?
Yeah.
And I have this whole philosophy where it's like, I don't say don't do a drug. I would never do that. But have the knowledge before you do
of
it.
What you're doing.
Exactly. Yeah, don't just take a pill from somebody you don't know. You don't know what that could be. You could end up in a van somewhere down by the river. Yeah. I don't know what you're doing, but you know, you have to be aware and be aware of your surroundings, and it makes for a better experience in life.
Yeah, and people often get being aware mixed up with having to be overly anxious. But like, once you're aware of the situation that is going on around you, you're way more free to open up to do everything that you want. You know what I'm saying? But when you walk into a room ignorant, you're cut off from like certain segues and certain doors.
And you're nervous.
Yeah.
And you know, you tend not to be part of the group that's doing whatever it is they're doing. And you stand out.
Mm-hmm. And there's no way to grow if you're constantly putting yourself in that position to be huddled up in the corner, because nobody's going to come save you.
Nobody is. Nobody at all. Yeah. You got to make that first step.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no. And it's important. So I think anytime you can provide that kind of knowledge, it will help people out. Even if they don't realize it's going to help them out, they'll remember back when they're in that situation. They'll be like, oh, wait, what do I know about this?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then they'll go with it. Yeah. Hopefully. That's my hope.
And to get to know you a little bit better, like, what's a little background on you? Like, how was it for you growing up? Like, what was that experience like?
So I'm actually the first person in my family to complete a 4-year college degree.
Wow.
Also the first to have a doctorate. My family's kind of just, you know, your standard cookie cutter family.
Yeah.
With a lot of roots back to Ireland and Wales.
Okay.
So, you know, I once listened to a comedian who said, I don't care what flag your Caucasian runs under, Kevin, or whatever the kid's name was that she was making fun of. But so, you know, not that big of a deal, but still have family over in Europe. So go visit them every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I had really great parents.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the youngest of 6.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a trip.
What was that like?
So my brother and I were oopses.
Yeah.
Like, So my brother's older than me, but between my brother and our oldest sibling, there's 18 years. So we were the oopses. Yeah. We weren't meant to be. So pretty much it was like my four older sisters had grown up. They were out of the house before like I was even like fully aware. But my brother and I kind of became like our own little family within the family. You know? Yeah. And then our sisters acted like aunts and, you know, we never listened to them. We were hell to them. Like, we would just terrorize the hell out of them, as brothers do. But yeah, so pretty big family. We just recently had a reunion for my mom's 80th birthday. And
nice. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. It's a huge thing. Yeah. So there were 37 grandkids there and 8 great-grandkids there.
Wow.
It was just a hot mess. A lot of voices, a lot of loud people, so it was pretty good. But yeah, no, so that's kind of my background a little bit. So
any sports, extracurricular activities that you're into?
So I was the nerd. Like D&D, like I was all about it. Would go like competitions, things like that, chess. I also was in golf. Whoever does that.
Oh, no, I play golf, too.
Oh, good, good. All right, so, no, not so bad.
Yeah.
Did lacrosse for a little bit, but it wasn't for me, so didn't go on beyond ninth grade. And then, you know, just a couple of martial arts, that was about it. But my real passion when I was younger was four on the floor roller skates. Summer hit, and you couldn't get me out of those roller skates. Like, I would go everywhere in roller skates. It was awesome.
Did you build, like, a certain philosophy, not to get too deep with the roller skates, but, like, it is just roller skates. But, like, it may be deeper than that. So what was it about the roller skates that just drew you to?
I think it was the freedom. Like, once you're on those wheels, like, you can go anywhere you want, assuming it's paved. I learned that the hard way. Assuming it's paved, but you know, it's more freeing than walking. And like, you can just do whatever. And I think that's what it was. I don't know. It was just a good thing to do. It felt right. And then recently, as I became an adult, so I've done now three of these tours on my bike, bicycle. So I've ridden from Los Angeles or from San Francisco to Los Angeles on a bike. It takes 7 days. Did it for charity.
Wow.
Really got into it. So you train all year, you ride your bike all year. So you get used to it, but you do about 100 miles each day.
Wow.
Down the coast. It's really cool. In the summer. So
in that experience, like,
coming
down
so
from north
much.
To south, like, what's that like?
So there are, you don't really realize it unless you're like on a bike or walking it, but there are 11 different microbiomes like the whole way down. So you have coastal, you have woodland, you have plains, you have desert, you have like all of these different microbiomes that you have to go through. The hills suck. San Francisco, I love San Francisco, but I hate it. The hills are just out of control. So there's one hill that everybody hates on the trip. It's called the Quad Buster because really, like, it takes all day to climb the hill.
Wow.
And then the way down is super fast, but it takes all day to climb the hill. But so the charity, it's for AIDS and HIV patients. Make sure that they have free access to medication, which is a good thing to do. And when I was younger, so one of my best friends, his mom was a pediatrician, and it was right when HIV really started hitting everywhere, and she hated wearing rubber gloves
because
pediatricians, you know, you have to feel, you have to find veins and do all that stuff. She punctured herself after taking care of a little preemie who had HIV AIDS at the time, and there was no cure for it. So she eventually developed AIDS and passed away. And her son went on to create this HIV foundation that really helps people, mothers in particular, to make sure that they're healthy,
That's
their babies
beautiful.
Are healthy.
Yeah.
So I've always been kind of in tune with that world. And there's a lot of, you know, drug abuse that happens in that world too. And that's how people end up getting HIV sometimes. So that's what got me into it. And just doing the ride, it's phenomenal. It hurts. It hurts so much. But when you cross that finish line and you see people who you really helped, like crying and cheering you on, like, nothing can take up that
or
feeling.
Compare. Yeah.
Like, it's amazing.
If you had to write a book about it, like, what would be the title of it?
Ooh. Wow. The pain that feels so good.
Wow. That's
or maybe like the hurt that makes you feel good. Like something like that.
It hurts so good. Yeah. That's beautiful. Have you ever thought about writing a book? Or no. What was you have so to do a dissertation, right?
I did. So yeah. I have a book out.
Okay.
It's the textbook. Yeah. And I'm working on another one for a different class, but mm-hmm. I've always wanted to kind of like sit and like write my own non-academic book.
Yeah.
But when you're in a professorship, like you really have no time to do anything
True.
That's not academic. So
yeah.
You think summers, but no, not really.
Yeah.
Not at all. So yeah. I keep toying around with the idea, like, so when people used to ask me, like, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Mm-hmm.
I would always say retired.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's my goal. Like,
yeah.
I want to be retired when I grow up.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's when I'll write the nonfiction or
yeah.
fiction book that I've had.
You got to read that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got a lot of experience.
Need a little time.
Yeah. Oh, man. But any more questions? We don't even have to keep prolonging this. We already at 45 minutes.
Oh, wow. So
yeah.
I guess just one last question for you.
Yeah.
So, what's it like coming from Detroit to Los Angeles?
Detroit to Los Angeles is a very long trek, but coming from inner city to inner city, it's fun to get adjusted. I was just talking about this morning, and I like to see my life as I grew up in chaos. So it's internal chaos, like whether it be at home,
yep.
like internal or like external, like I was always playing sports.
Yep.
So as I'm always moving around, so I got so used to that. And it's a gift and a curse because it prepares you for real life. But, like, when you're not doing anything at all, you sort of start
yep.
tripping out. You're like, yo, something should be going on.
I should be doing something.
Yeah. Yep. So being able to take myself outside of that environment and come to another environment that's not that much better with the chaos, but is a new place of scenery, at, you know, being the inquisitive person I am,
yep.
I'm able to get used to something new. Like being in Detroit, I know my way all the way around Detroit from street to street, from
yep.
from block to block, city to city, whatever it may be. I can navigate my way through there. I really wanted to put myself in a position to where it was like a full reset. Now, the person I was at home in Detroit is the same person I am out here, just a better version.
Just a different version.
Growing,
yeah.
So still growing and becoming who I am, but I'm not able to utilize my resources to their full extent, like I was in Detroit. I got to build new resources here. So it's like, how can I start from the ground up without having to pay that much of a cost? You know what
exactly.
I'm saying? I'm still a kid.
Exactly.
So being able to get to college, that's like the best time to do it. It's like, wow, I have the greatest opportunity to start now and build from the ground up.
And do it. That's
yeah.
awesome.
And when you hear people talk about the networking and connection, it becomes oversaturated. Because they are just thinking about, oh, I need it for whatever field I'm going into, whatever
yeah.
I'm doing this, whatever I'm doing that. But my philosophy behind it is just get to know people, even if it's one person at a time.
You have it right there.
Yeah,
so those people who are constantly running the game, trying to, I got to make these connections.
Yeah.
Dude, what are you going to do with that connection?
Yeah,
so it's more about meeting your people, finding your people.
Yeah.
And making the best out of it
mm-hmm.
with them, because really they're going to be with you the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Those connections you made at some party,
yeah.
they might even not remember who you are.
Right, because it was under the influence.
Exactly. Or, you know, maybe you got their number and you don't remember their name, so you got to take them to Starbucks so you
yeah.
can get their name. Somebody has to call it out for you, right?
Yeah.
It's not about quantity. It's
yeah.
about quality.
Yes.
Like, you have to have good connections.
Yes.
And now is the perfect time to start building
mm-hmm.
those.
And you become this multifaceted person that's able to, you know, too much of anything can kill you.
Yep.
But if you're able to utilize it in the right way, you can use it to the best of your ability.
Exactly.
Now, I don't have to go out and become a doctor or a philosopher on drugs to know you, but I can do something in life that will have me go, wait, I know somebody for this, and I'll
exactly.
be able to call up, or I'll be able to
yep.
fall back on an experience that I can get through a certain situation. So yeah.
Yeah, it's perfect. And you know, I think that a lot of people get trapped in that whole idea, especially this generation. They get trapped in this idea of I have to be an influencer.
Yeah,
I have to be
yeah.
on. I constantly have to be on.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't slip. I can't fail.
Yeah.
And they don't realize what's happening around them. They
yeah.
don't take the time to pause and say, oh, this is my life right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is what is good. This is what's bad.
Yeah.
But they don't take the time to pause because they're constantly on that grind.
Yeah.
And you look at some of them and you're like, dude, your grind is way off.
Yeah.
And you don't know how to tell them that or help them. But at the end of the day, if you have your people, they're the ones that are going to tell you,
yeah.
look, dude, you got to get it together.
Yeah, and a good movie for that is Ferris Bueller's
Day Off. 100%.
takes that day off of school, and yep. I think that was the movie my dad introduced me to, and it was just like, it helped me not take things so serious. Like, life is serious as it can get, but it's all about how you look at it. Like, it doesn't have to be that crazy, you know?
Yep. Things happen. If nobody's bleeding or dead, you're good.
You're good, yeah. And so, you said you had a good point. It was, life can be, you know, just life is how it is, and it can be whatever, but don't take it too serious because, take it slow. And then the influencer part, that's what I was going to get on. Yep. I used to think I had to be this big guy, this big influencer. Like, yes, I love this podcast. And if I could, I'm going to find a way to market it, to get it out to the world.
And amp it up.
Yeah, yep. I believe it should be out to the world. But I don't have to be in front of the cameras, or I don't have to be in the light all the time. I like to be the low-key guy that knows everybody.
Exactly.
I don't want to have the highest profile, you know what I'm saying?
Like, I mean, look at the cost of that for some people.
Right.
It's a house of cards. And one strong wind, it's done. It's all gone.
It's all over.
Yep. It's important also not to be so hard on yourself.
Yeah.
Like, people take everything so seriously. Mm-hmm. And, dude, it's not that deep.
It's not. Because at the end
you're
of the day.
You're not doing brain surgery. It's not that deep.
At the end of the day, it's night. You know what I'm saying? You get to go to sleep, wake up the next day, hopefully, and try it all again. Everything in life is trial and error. It's just being able to put one foot in front of the other.
Exactly. And meeting people and being part of that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you take yourself too seriously, you forget how wonderful and beautiful life is at its simplest. So just, you know, do you, but remember not to be hard on yourself.
Right. All right, man. That was a good conclusion. We hit 50 minutes. This is always a surprise question. I never preface it before we start, but do you have a quote of the day?
A quote of the day. I actually do. So I've been thinking about my grandmother a lot. She used to say this to me all the time. Stars can't shine without the darkness.
Mm.
So that's your quote for the day.
Yeah, bet. Thank you so much for coming on. And we would love to have you back on whenever, before I graduate, whatever it may be.
I would love that.
However, I got your email. So yeah,
awesome.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you.
Have a good one.